Okay. Welcome to episode 25 of the Never Iron Anything podcast. The podcast has been created to keep you occupied during the virus lockdown. My name's Tony Esmond, writer of the Monster Spotters Club and Atomic Hercules. Today we have a returning chum, the writer of many great small press books, including Wow Retracted, which I have in front of me, Break the Cake, and the upcoming Mount a Rescue. It's Dave Robertson. Hey, Dave.
Hello.
I got that right, didn't I? Mount a Rescue, that's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Mount a Rescue.
Good. Yes, excellent. I see you got the proof copy back the other day, didn't you? So, any day now?
Yeah, 4 days ago. I just put in the final order for the run, so hopefully next week you should get it, yeah.
Oh, good man. Nice one. We'll talk about that in a bit. Today's choice is something of a combination of two things. It's a book, a comic, rather, a graphic novel of a kind, but it's also something of a mission statement, I'm going to say, Dave. Something a little bit different from what we talked about previously. We did Warlock before, so this is quite different, I suppose, isn't it? Yeah. Did you want to tell the listener what you've chosen to do?
Oh, well, I've chosen The Cute Manifesto by James Kochalka.
Yes, The Kochalka. Right. This is another book that I had not read. I am acquainted with Kochalka, and I've read quite a lot of his stuff, actually, but this is one that I hadn't come across before. It came out in 2005. It's not on Comixology. I couldn't find it on there, so I bought the hard copy. Put out by Alternative Comics. Alternative Comics at $19.95 in dollars, which seems like a pretty good deal. It's 8 separate stories, often of varying styles and varying lengths. But however it does start with, it starts with 2 one-page mission statements, stroke diatribes, stroke collection of thoughts. One's called Craft is the Enemy, and one's called Craft is Not a Friend, which I'm sure we will talk about in a second. How did you come across this creator? Is it somebody you purposely follow, or?
Well, he is now and has been for years.
Right.
I think the first time that I would have come across him was, the Craft is the Enemy opening page.
Yes, yeah.
That's actually, that was a letter in the Comics Journal, in their letters section.
Okay, right.
So I can still remember sitting on the bus reading the Comics Journal in like the mid-90s and reading that letter, and it was like a bolt, out of the blue.
Yeah.
It was like, I remember I'd read it and it really made me go, wow. I mean, if anyone's read it, it really is like kind of a let's get going kind of thing,
Yeah, I know, and I thought of you immediately when I read it, actually, too, because I know that's a great sort of, almost like a catchphrase. It's a mission statement of yourself, isn't it? Just get on with stuff.
Well, that's the way I try to look at it now, yeah. So
it's a bit more than that, though, isn't it? Is it a bit more than that?
How do you mean?
Well, it is like let's get started, let's get on, let's get the party started sort of thing. But it's also Craft is, the people who spend days and hours and months and years working on a comic really need to pull their finger out. It needs to be more... Mm-hmm. Instinctual, I suppose, is the word. Is that right, do you think?
Yeah, I think he was shifting the importance off of, sitting trying to make perfectly done, really pretty, really impressive pictures in comics and saying, look, that's just all bullshit, Just get on with it. Get a comic made, start right now. There's some really... I did find it inspiring.
Right, interesting, yeah.
This thing that's in that letter did stir up a lot of feeling at the time in the journal.
Yes.
So, like, the next issue, there was letters in from a lot of cartoonists saying, what is this? This guy's talking nonsense of, what you would imagine people would say. Of course you need Craft. Of course this and that,
Yeah.
And I think it went on for about 2 years or something in my memory. Every letters page was another, this turned into a saga. The way things used to before the internet.
The Comics Journal was really like that, wasn't it? There would be arguments that would run for years on that page, weren't there?
Yeah, blood and thunder.
Now, let's just summarise for the people who haven't read it. There's basically two sections to this. The first one is called Craft is the Enemy. And it stems from... And it is the letter that he wrote in after reading Comics Journal 188 for a couple of hours. My mind is now... racing and blood pounding. And he says, I felt something that I had to write and say, craft is the enemy. You could labour your whole life perfecting your craft, struggling to draw better, hoping one day to have the skills to produce a truly great comic. If this is how you are thinking, you will never produce that great comic, the powerful work of art that you dream of. There is nothing wrong in trying to draw well, but it is not of primary importance. What every creator should do, must do, is use the skills they have right now. A great masterpiece is within reach. If only your willpower is strong enough, just like Green Lantern, just look within yourself and say what you have to say. Which is interesting. So he's saying you may not have the skills, you know, may all not be Barry Windsor Smith or someone, you know, but just get on with it and draw a comic. And then, so that and that's the letter, isn't it? That craft is the enemy is the letter. I'm guessing, not having read it, that craft is not a friend is something else, is it? The second section to it, which is a couple of pages later.
Yeah, that was after a few issues of everyone telling him how stupid this was and all the reasons why this was wrong and ignorant, what he'd said. So he kind of wrote in another letter saying...
Oh, this is another letter he wrote in, is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, this was the next letter from months ago, you know. Okay, I'll say it again in a different way for the idiots who couldn't understand it the first time.
That's brilliant.
And then he starts...
That's so... For when a cartist sits down to draw and their goal is to draw well, they're doomed to failure. No matter how much they practice, the best they can hope for is to become a polished hack of aping their preconceived ideals of good comics, to become a mere hollow shell of the cartoonists who have come before. For that reason, there is no objective good in art. Someone could conceivably think Spawn is well drawn and think Peanuts is poorly drawn, although that sounds insane to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it goes on like that. Mm-hmm. They're not long letters, are they? They're reasonably short things, like one page.
That's short, yeah.
Yeah, the books are sort of square-sized indie book, isn't it? You know, it's quite a thick book. It's not a short read, but it's I don't know how you'd describe it. It's 3 inches, 4 inches by 4 inches. It's sort of in a square format, isn't it? Sort of thing. The cover is intrigued me a little bit. It's if you saw this on the shelf, you'd think it was Kolchaka doing a book about his kid, wouldn't you? Which it kind of is in parts, but.
It does look like that.
Seven pictures.
He actually, in general, I think your regular person would look at really all the Kochalka stuff and say, oh, that's kids' books, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's his style, no matter what it's about.
He does
even
both,
when it's called
he?
Super Fuckers, you know?
I was going to get onto Super Fuckers in a minute, but yeah. He jumps about a bit, doesn't he? So, for people who don't know, James Kochalka, born 1967, a.k.a. James Kochalka Superstar, lives in Vermont, in Burlington in Vermont, which is quite an arty town, apparently. He was the, or still is, the Comics Laureate of Vermont. That's quite a title. And some of his books are Monkey vs. Robot, which is a favourite of mine. Superfuckers, like you said, which is about a sort of shit superhero team. I'm going to say.
Yeah.
American Elf, which is a sort of diary comic of himself, but portrayed as he gives himself sort of 8 elf-like features. Another one is Dragon Puncher, which is a kid's thing, which is quite popular.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dragon Puncher is great. That was popular in this house when the kids were really young.
Ah, nice. Ah, cool. He lives with his wife, his kids, and his cat, and he often writes about all of them. He said he's got this weird claim. He said he'd seen comics, but he was more inspired to draw by seeing a cartoon dog in a fire safety pamphlet he saw as a kid. And he was quite taken with that. I saw him in an interview say that. He did 2 comics. I'm not sure if you've seen these, Dave, called The Conversation, which are small.
Yes.
Yeah, small little comics. And
yes.
What, they're drawn by 2 artists at once. So Kochalka draws himself. And in the first issue, Craig Thompson draws himself, from blankets. And in the second one, Jeffrey Brown draws himself. So it's got that about them having a conversation, but they each draw themselves in it, sort of thing, if you see what I mean. Yeah, quite interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really a Kochalka fanboy.
Right, okay.
Anything that comes out with him, I'm getting it, you know.
Yeah.
So I do have both of those conversations.
They're quite nice. They are quite nice things to own, I think, those ones.
Yeah.
So what was
cut your job?
Sorry, man. Go on.
I was going to say, Quit Your Job. That was a good one.
Yes, I haven't got that one. Yeah.
Quit Your Job.
What was the first book? Was this the first thing you saw of his, The Letter, or had you seen his work anywhere before that?
I'm thinking The Letter was the first thing.
Yeah, okay.
Because that was like 94, 95, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been early
that
for
was
me.
Back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His stuff.
And then Quit Your Job was a title that reached out to me as well, you know.
Right, okay. That was autobiography? Same... That was an autobiographical one again, was it? Or
kind of. Similar to what's in this Cute Manifesto, you know. It's kind of all in the title there, Quit Your Job. So he's talking about, you know, how you should be living your life and
right,
all this kind of thing. So it was good.
He famously worked in a Chinese restaurant for 6 years.
Yes.
Now, of course, the other side of things, perhaps we should do how I first saw him. So I first came to my notice in a New York comic shop. I think it was Jim Hanley's. And I picked up a CD of his that was on the shelf, which I think off the top of my head was Monkey vs. Robot, or it might have been James Kochalka Superstar, I'm not sure which. Because he's quite well known for being I think Heidi McDonald calls him a rocker cartoonist. She says he is. And he's actually, have you heard any of his music? Or
I've watched some of his videos on YouTube, and there was a compilation years ago that I bought that he had some tracks on.
Right.
I can't remember what label he was on.
No.
Was he on Ryko Disc or something? Some kind of compilation, and he had a couple of tunes on it.
Right. It's sort of punky sort of stuff. The Monkey vs. Robot is, so it's also a comic, but it's also an album. There's Hockey Monkey, which is probably his famous one, which was a theme to a TV series called The Loop, which I've never seen or heard of.
No,
I think he got a few quid for that, thankfully. But he's actually not a, they're quite a fun band to watch. He's quite quite the front man, you know. He sort of throws himself about quite a lot.
Do you know, I have a memory of him out in his garden in a video, and it's something about wash yourself or something, and he's in like a water, almost like a jacuzzi or something, or. And he's, and, you know, it's years ago since I watched it, so this is no use. But he is all soaping himself up and everything out in the garden, you know.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And I think I thought, yeah, good fun. I'll stick to the comics, you know.
yeah. I know. I was being a little bit of a completist by buying them, but I think he's had about 20 albums out, and I'm certainly not going to buy them all. But Hockey Monkey's quite catchy. Yeah, I'll put the link to the music video in this thing.
Yeah.
Should we have a little flick through the book now and just see what we think of it? It's quite, I'm going to say, there's a sort of existential almost, isn't it? Sunburn is...
Yes.
He's got a number of styles, for those that don't know him. He's got a much more sort of cartoony style that you can tell where he's going with the strip, because he draws himself in one of two ways. He either draws himself as this sort of strange cross between a sort of human rabbit and a deer or something with big goofy teeth, doesn't he?
Sort of yeah.
Peculiar, but obviously like a nice easy shorthand to get emotion out of. Or he draws himself much more realistically, which he does in the first part of this, in the story that's called Sunburn. What did you think of this one, Dave?
It kind of lays the table out, doesn't it? It is existential.
Yeah.
It's not existential angst, I don't think. It's more existential musings.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, actually. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
He's sort of sitting there thinking about his fingernails and a doorknob and a clock.
Yeah.
And it's...
Just everything and how he fits into it all. And
yeah.
I'm thinking, you know, if you start talking about this, it might sound terrible, this comic. You know, I'm listening to myself thinking, that sounds awful, you know?
Yeah.
I think maybe you don't want this explained to you. You just want to start reading it and see if it works or not. So let's end the episode there.
There we're done. Nice one. Yeah, good stuff.
No, it's good.
It's a nicely done, very slow, very quiet comic about where your mind wanders when you've got you're quite happily sitting there doing nothing, I suppose.
Yes.
And he's, I think this, because I think this, I get the sense that the comic is in some way chronological, and it's before he's had a kid, and he's kind of living as almost like a bachelor life, isn't he? I get the sort of, it's a little bit sort of, and he's quite excited by the fact the phone rings, and then he thinks about a doorknob, and then he thinks about, oh, I might buy some new clothes, and then there's a whole page which is just a picture of a clock.
I loved that bit with the clothes. He was saying it might be nice to get some clothes, but so what?
Yeah.
I laughed at that bit. It might be nice to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
I don't need new clothes hanging on my body.
And I'm always impressed go on, sorry.
I'm saying he's like, is my body a clothes hanger? He's just thinking about everything. And
yeah. And I'm always warm to people who have comic boxes in their bedrooms. So I mean, suddenly I'm on side with him, you know. I was worried for a minute there he might just be some sort of cool guy who's doing an autobio comic, but he has got a couple of long boxes there, isn't he? You know.
You don't want him to be too cool.
Exactly, yeah. And it's
cool people are annoying.
They are, that's very true. And the toilet is an extension of my bowels, and just a picture of the toilet with the lid up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a strange one, man. I don't know.
I don't know. It does appeal to me because it's. Yeah. Is it strange though, or is it just completely normal? I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems completely normal to me.
There's nothing more.
It seems
normal
like what
it, maybe.
Makes sense about it.
Yeah. There's nothing more normal than it in a way. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's a funny one because I suppose we ingest art and we take art in, and we are influenced by how we feel at the time we read something.
Yes.
And
that's true.
And I imagine if I was forced to read this at school, for example, or for at university for an essay or something, I'd go, what the fuck is this? It's just him talking, not thinking nonsense and drawing random pictures of things. You know, but taken as a whole and chatting to you and, you know, reading it, you know, in a quiet moment in the evening where we're chatting over a podcast about it, it somehow works better. Does that make sense? I don't know if it's...
Yeah, I think being... made to read any book ruins it at school, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, even the best books, you're having to read them. So there is that element to what you're saying.
Yeah.
I have recommended this comic to one artist that I know.
Okay.
And he came back with it and was very much against it. he's the first guy I've got to read it, and he came back and said, yeah, I don't want to be lectured to.
Really? Okay.
And I thought, oh, okay. So he took against it. He thought the comic was telling him what life was all about, you know.
Yeah, okay.
So that fits into what you're saying. It depends on what you, how you're feeling, what you're thinking.
Yeah, how you go into a book, isn't it, almost? Yeah.
Yeah. I just took it as more, you know, thanks for sharing your thoughts on the world with me, you know,
yeah,
kind of thing.
And there is some lovely drawing in it, you know.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
He does capture moments.
Yeah, he really does.
Shall we move on to the next one? So the next one is called... That one's actually quite a long one. It's 24 pages, which when you just heard us explain it, you may not believe it's 24 pages, but actually longer than a Marvel comic book. And probably more happens in it than most Marvel comic books, let's face it these days, but there you go. Reinventing Everything is the next story, called Part 1. And this goes back to his American Elf style character. So the caricatured, goofy kid. He's playing at a Game Boy in a skate park in South Carolina.
Yes.
If he was doing that now, I might have to say, mate, you're a 40-year-old man. Stop playing a Game Boy. And you know, you're too cool for school. But did you want to just mention what it's about, Dave? This one, how it works for you?
Yeah, this one for me was, as you just mentioned, he is on the Game Boy, and then he starts drawing the pictures in the style of the kind of pixels in the game. Yeah. And he's relating that to how the world is really just a load of, you know, little things all bashing against each other. And that was interesting because I'm not a game player at all.
No,
never
neither.
Have been.
Never. Same as man.
So he was going into it a big interest he's got and a big passion he's got there that I did not relate to, but that was still interesting to read it. And when he's talking about if his little character in the game falls over, he'll go, ow, while he's playing it.
Okay.
And he's talking about how the connection between that art form and him playing it and how powerful it is. And he says, what was it, the painters? This is the kind of visceral impact that painters can only dream of eliciting with their work.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking I'm getting good points of view here on this.
Yeah, I'm the same, man. Yeah, I agree completely. It's he uses the shift to a sort of pixelated version of himself as in mm-hmm. the Game Boy world as a sort of to break down personal experience and also to work out what is art and how it affects
yes.
us, isn't it? It's that sort of cleverness.
Yeah.
All the while he's kind of either talking to himself or to us. There's
yes.
a bit of both, isn't there?
Yeah.
I didn't think it was lecturing,
and he does,
though.
But
I didn't feel that way.
No, I didn't think that,
yeah.
but my pal did. he does immediately bemoan the fact, saying this power is wasted on movie tie-ins, company mascots, corporate
yeah.
branding. So it's the commercialization of art that he's complaining about there, obviously. And so that was a good point as well.
Yeah.
And I think he believes in art as a way to put across emotions and thoughts and, you know, what art should be about, really.
Yeah.
Well, but as soon as you say that, hey, you think, well, I better not say that.
No,
but, I mean, you can
yeah, I
you can make 100, you can make thousands of Star Wars comics, you know?
Yeah.
You can do that. And, you know, I've got plenty of them in my house, so I'm
yep.
not complaining. But it's not really...
Yeah, is it
worth anything? Is it?
Does it have that content?
I mean, it's like I'll get
it.
This.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, it just doesn't really. I mean, it can be fun, but it's just.
Yeah.
It's all just nonsense, isn't it?
And it's also interesting because if there was ever a creator out there who is equatable to his art, this I would say he's probably the guy because he did. Those don't know, he did a comic strip about himself every day for like 20 years or something. So he is. There is a very. Blurred line between his comic book character and himself quite constantly, you know, which you get here.
Yeah, the American Elf
yeah.
the collections. I think there's about 5 volumes of that.
Yeah.
But he used to just check it every day and he'd done another one.
That's right. You couldn't go back online. You could just check the one for the day, couldn't you? I think that's how it works.
That's right. You
yeah.
could subscribe.
That's right.
And you could get the archives. This was all like 15, 20 years ago now. So
yeah.
I guess everyone was experimenting with what was possible
yeah.
about monetizing stuff online.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I think I saw him say that he was the first person to do that as a little quote in an interview. He said that. I can't find it now. But yeah, he was saying that he was the first person to become, claims to be the first person to a daily autobiographical comic strip. I'm not 100% sure if that's true, but he seems to think so. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. And so he does blur the line. So we get that shift in reality. And it goes from quite a profound... I mean, he's always grinning. This creature's always sort of got a weird, goofy grin on his face. You know, there's a sort of profoundness to what he says, mixed up with some
yeah.
baby kittens. And then he goes home, has a nap, wakes up and goes, oh, I've got some email. And it ends there, and
that's right.
It's
yeah,
funnily turns you on your head there. I think a bit, you know, I quite like that, you know.
Yeah, the ending was good because after he's went over thinking about what art is and how it's the rhythm of life that's important to tune into, and the technologies are actually changing the rhythm now of life and
yeah,
and all this kind of stuff, and then as he's before he gets to the end. He's saying accept the beauty in everything, and this page where he's got the kittens
yep.
and the Twin Towers.
Yes,
stumbling baby kittens or exploding buildings.
That's a hell of a line, isn't it? That's a great line. Yeah,
yeah. I mean that page is something else.
Yeah,
Kochalka's not really messing around, you know.
Yeah,
this is real.
Yeah. No, that's the weird thing about it, isn't it? It's, there's a realness to it, because you kind of think of him both as that character, that drawing we saw in the first trip, and also I don't draw any difference between the fact that he's also this sort of goofy caricature as well. They seem to be the same person without looking the same, you know?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Some of the stories in this, I've got them as issues.
Okay.
That presumably, well, they would have been before this collection.
Right.
So I don't know if what order these, because it doesn't say that in the book. It doesn't tell you where they originally appeared or.
Yeah.
So I think this book's a bit of a collection of different things.
Yeah, it's not.
So maybe that accounts for the changing of the appearance, and maybe he did new for this book or that kind of thing. So.
Yeah, or he's the page count. It's because it tonally changes after this, doesn't it? You get these two first strips, which, having read the two introductory pieces to the two letters to the Comics Journal, they fit, don't they? Mm-hmm. They're subject-wise, they fit into these two letters and what he's saying, and he's talking about the nature of art in these two. And then the next one, which is Reinventing Everything, is it part two or part,
yes.
part two? Somehow seems to
part
be
two,
something
yeah.
different, doesn't it? It seems to be more about them having a kid and the sort of...
Different topic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Reinventing everything, yeah. Reinventing his life in the whole world now, because he's having a kid.
Yeah.
And then... So I thought that chapter was really notable as well.
Okay.
Really, in a way, I guess the most standout thing is what he does and writes and draws about the birth itself.
Okay, yeah.
So that's a powerful sequence to me.
Is that the swimming with the sea and the waves, that thing?
Yeah, yes, yeah. That's right. He's talking about Amy in labour.
Yeah.
And, fighting with all her might to help that baby boy be born. So it goes along. And then you get a bit about James Kachalka being there.
Yeah.
And he says, then back into the vortex, holding her hand so she won't be swept away.
Yeah.
And then the next page is, but it's too much. So he's holding onto her hand, but it's too much, and she's been dragged away from him.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And it's a really good comic about birth. And then that bit is about being... The man at the birth.
Yeah, that's true.
You're kind of stood there spectating, trying to help, but you know you're. So I think that's really
powerful. And you get a sort of, gaggle of medical people who have their backs
that's
to him,
right,
and he can't sort of penetrate it, and
and then
the baby comes in the wave after that. So he's sort of almost a stranger to it, isn't he? I'm shaking like a leaf, he says, and then the baby arrives. So.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, man. I never thought of it that way. And the use of the analogy of the waves, you know, that she's drowned, she's not drowning, they're riding the wave. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah,
imagery. Yeah, really good stuff.
It's not really a topic that you see tackled very often by anybody in any media, really.
Yeah.
Never mind comics.
Yeah.
And so that really.
Unless you're talking about that issue of Miracle Man. It's slightly different, yeah. And he's quite he's often, I think, from the videos I've seen, he's a bit of a stay-at-home dad, isn't he? He sort of looks after the kids quite a lot. Yeah, and they're a big focus of a lot of his American Elf autobiographical stories as well. You see that quite a lot.
Yeah, I remember him saying that the reason he decided to stop the American Elf was his kid was getting old enough that, you know, they were going to be getting affected by it.
Right.
And be aware of it.
Yeah.
So maybe get hassled for it or questioned about it, or just it could impact on their young lives. So he thought, right, I'll stop.
There's a bit later on, isn't there, where somebody... Oh, no, I'll tell you where I saw this. I saw this in an interview today. And the interviewer said, does your wife read the autobiographical stories? And he goes, well, no, she can't be bothered. And then they flash to a page where she's going, my vagina really hurts today. And he says, and then he goes back to him and he says, well, her friends at work read them, though. You know, you're like, oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah. No, I can see that being a reason, definitely, yeah. Yeah, it'd be embarrassing for a teenager to go to school and all his mates are reading his dad's diary comics. Yeah.
I think the American Elf Daily Strip is a unique piece of work as well. Yeah. With it being just a small thing every day.
Yeah, it's quite the achievement.
But as it grew over years, you saw patterns and it's a unique piece of work, that.
Because it starts out where he is this sort of weird creature, but everyone around him is slightly more normal. But then it turns into the fact that he's got some friends who are sort of slightly alien-y looking. You know, one looks a bit like a bear and this sort of thing. And it takes on its own, it becomes its own little universe, doesn't it? In a more sort of fantastical way, I think. And didn't it start out as black and white and then it became colour? I've got a feeling that's right, isn't it?
That's certainly what happens with the collected books, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm just thinking as you're talking there.
Yeah.
You get a lot of, for decades now, comics and comics readers have been into this idea of comics being for adults now, you know.
Yeah.
But really, a book like this, you know, never mind your vertigo and all this, you know. Well, I shouldn't say that, right? I shouldn't say anything, right? Negative about anything ever, right?
Right. Okay. Apparently,
but there's a lot of things held up that, hey, look, this is really sophisticated and mature and adult and this, that, and the next thing, and you know, it is. It probably really is compared to what came before, but then is any of it an honest book by an author about the birth of his kids, about life? You know,
this is an incredibly real and truthful, isn't it? At once, it's, you know, when you say,
yeah, it's on a different plane, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I get that completely.
I started that off wrong, you know, comparing it with someone else. That's not really the point. The point is, there's a certain thing that could be adult, but isn't really. You know, it's like here's all the comics that are not really like all of our other comics, but really that are just the same.
Yeah, I get you.
And, you know, maybe somebody swears on page 7 or something, you know, and something like that.
Yeah, I get you.
But anyway.
But yeah,
this
is the true adult, isn't it? This is the true responsible.
Well, to me.
Yeah. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
There's, like you say, in the next story we go into, there's some real moments. So there's The Horrible Truth About Comics, which is one of the next ones. And it's, they're in bed together.
What a title, that is.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's a brave title. Oh. Yeah.
I love that.
We need to call an anthology that one day, Dave. We'll just do it. Look at the sales flow.
Well, that's one of them that I have as an issue.
Okay.
So right. I saw that in a shop, and it was The Horrible Truth About Comics. So, you know, James Kachalka, there was pretty much no way that I wasn't buying that, you know. Just as soon as I saw it. And then when you open it, I think it's like, page 2, practically the first thing it said, he's lying in bed, I can't stop thinking about comics. Yes. And I just thought, right, this is me. This is me. This is about me right away.
I do like that about this. I do like that he's completely obsessed, isn't he, with it? Because he's doing it every day. He's having to come up with a story every day.
Yeah.
And he's going to bed and he's thinking, what am I going to do tomorrow? You know, what about comics? You know, and it goes that way, doesn't it? And he does consider it all the time. It's great. It's really good. And then he talks about the nature of art, doesn't he? So we go back into the nature of art and he does stuff like...
That's right.
Does he put a footprint on a rock? I'm trying to remember. Yeah, that's right. He makes... he stood in something... we try a lot of crazy stuff at random as little children, but we're delighted to discover that pushing a crayon on a piece of paper leaves a mark physically on the most basic level. Visual art is mark making, and it's true, isn't it? The blank surface is an undefined void. It all gets very deep again, doesn't it? He's in the woods, and he's getting quite deep again.
I love that page next to the one you're talking about, where he's talking about the scribbles kids have made.
Yeah,
and he's just drawn a picture there of he's waving his arm around.
Okay.
I don't know if you're looking at it right now, but it's just the three arms. It's really simple drawing. Yeah. But it's really effective to me.
Yeah, so you can see he's drawing that scribble, can't you? He's doing that in the air, isn't he? Is that right?
Yeah, you can see that he's... It's the standard kind of comic
movement
method of having three arms, you know. Spider-Man did it all the time, you know.
And I get you. To show that movement in a single panel sort of thing.
That just looks like a really good example of it, though.
Yep.
That was great. That was well done. And he's talking about...
It's another soliloquy, isn't it? This book is full of sort of soliloquies to not even to the reader, just to everyone around, whatever is around him, in a way, isn't it? You know, sort of talking to himself out loud, almost.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And he's and this, there was a really great bit in this where he gets on to illustration, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And he's and that's when he's bringing up those ideas of spending years and time perfecting a certain kind of way of drawing and all that, you know.
Okay, so we're back to the craft thing again.
Well, it ties in, okay. Ties in with the first letter, I think, this comic.
Right, I get you, that's good.
What is art not, he says.
One of my favourite lines...
Art is not a way.
One of my favourite lines is, comics is a way of creating a universe. I kind of like that. I like that little line. The simplest and most direct way possibly to enter the reader's brain. Our memories fall into patterns of snippets, and so do comics. There's some great little lines in this. You know, it's, he's connecting up what we see on the page, because everything is, we're interpreting lines on a page that are not in fact real. And, you know, if an alien probably picked this up, they wouldn't understand that this weird little goofy creature is meant to be James Kolchaka wearing a spacesuit, you know. But it's interpretive, isn't it, all this art here. And he kind of defines it in a, I'm going to say, in a slightly cooler way than Scott McCloud did. In a slightly more verbose way, in a way. But verbose is the wrong word. I think more in a sort of poetical way, perhaps, than Scott McCloud did. You know. And then he gets back into bed.
Yeah, McCloud. You know.
Sorry, man, go on.
No, I was going to say, I'm just thinking McCloud's more kind of technical, isn't he?
Yeah.
And his overall approach. I think he says that himself, even in that book. He's saying there's different kinds of cartoonist.
Yeah.
I'm one that's presenting information, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's an interesting one. And then just to sort of play it out, he gets back into bed and goes out in space and still sort of talks about stuff.
I think in this chapter, he really brings in the idea of needing to have an idea, a concept, needing to be talking about something straight from your own personality and thoughts. That's what that's the important thing.
Yeah, that's the string of this book, isn't it? That's what this book is about, is translating those moments.
Yeah.
We've all had the moments, Dave, when we're walking about in town or we're doing the washing up and we have these sort of amazing thoughts, don't we? And we don't write them down. But he's managing to translate it into a 100-page comic, you know. Yeah. Technical mastery of one's medium does not an artist make. The only quality you need is the ability to open yourself up with honesty and pluck out the truth. And that's a great little phrase. Amazing.
It is great. You know, he does have a lot of great phrases, as you're mentioning.
Yeah.
And he still uses like comic things like the turn of the page for effect.
Yeah.
There's a great bit in this one where he's saying illustration is superficial, no matter how skilled, because it's secondary. The idea comes first. And the illustration explicates it.
Right.
And then you turn the page. You turn the page and he's kicking the beer can shouting, how tedious!
Yeah. And it's not without without humour either. There's one point where he tries to put some mouthwash in his gob and he's got a space helmet still on. Things like that, you know. Yeah.
It's good because you can tell he really means it. So you're getting the violent kick and it's funny. And he is putting in little... almost non-sequitur things just to offset it a bit. Like, he hits the space helmet with a mouthwash. And it's like, he's undercutting the pomposity a bit.
Yes, he is, which I like. I wouldn't have liked it as much without that sense of humour about it, I think. You know?
Yeah. That works a lot.
The other thing he does in this book, and he does it a couple of times, is he compares comics to music, which I kind of makes sense with him. And he there's all those theories about, you know, the way that music flows and, you know, the little quiet moments and the louder moments is the dramatic emphasis of, you know, especially stuff like classical music and stuff. And that works as well in fiction. And I think he understands that, doesn't he? And we see that certainly in the last story. You know, it's like, and they are like little punk songs, aren't they, these stories? They're like... There's a musical element.
Yeah, they are, in a way.
Like a DIY thing going on. And before we get on to some last questions I've got for you around this, Dave, I'm going to challenge you a little bit.
Do you know what? I've just I've just realised, but did we jump over the Cute Manifesto chapter itself?
Did we jump over the kid one? I think we did, didn't we? Yeah.
I think we skipped it.
Yeah, we did.
The Cute Manifesto.
Yeah, it's quite a short one, isn't it? Yeah, I've got it here again. Yeah, so it's...
Yeah, it's short. Yeah, that's right.
So it's about his kid, isn't it, almost? Mostly, yeah.
Yeah, it's about that. That sparks in him the idea of cuteness, and he's thinking about how we're all cute. He's using the term cute really for just innocence and purity, you know, childishness, like childish in a good way, keeping a hold of your how everybody should try to keep a hold of that. And then he also says we should not use cuteness to champion crass commercial ventures. So he's on that again, wasting all this for just selling product.
Shamelessly,
you know?
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So, do you know what? I just didn't want to think that we'd missed out.
No, that's fine, man. No, completely.
Cute Manifesto.
I agree, and I think I did. I think I skipped over it accidentally. But, yeah, and it's there's a growth in him throughout this, isn't it? He's had a kid in the course of this book. You know, and he has grown, and he's... There's a whole page that's just lettering, like words in this point, and yeah, I think it's
that's right. Yeah,
but one of the things he does do is he goes, does he go back on himself? Do you think on the spelunking for Slippery Cavefish, the epilogue in this?
Yeah, right at the end. Yeah. Okay. Now, what was the gist of that again?
So there have been many grand declarations made in this book in the heat of an argument. I can believe resolutely in absoluteness, but. Then later upon reflection, everything seems relative again. So he almost pulls back a little bit, doesn't he? Yeah.
I think he does. And I think that's something that happens. You know, when you make stories, or you'll know yourself, you know, making a comic or something, you're making some kind of statement about something, no matter what you're doing. So then you'll be held to account like, well, that's what you think. So explain yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's what you thought that day.
Yeah, we're not going to stand by it for the rest of our lives. You know, it's like a bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one thought you had, and it made a good story, and you know, and there was validity to it.
Yeah.
But things are flexible.
Yeah, things shift, don't they? And there's, I like his work, but then again, I also appreciate the work of, we talked about him earlier, Barry Windsor-Smith. You know, there's... They couldn't be further apart, but I appreciate both of them, I suppose. Yeah.
You know, getting on Barry Windsor-Smith and really off the topic, did you see that the Monster book is coming out?
Is that the one he's had planned for ages?
It's one that I've known about because, as I've mentioned before, I'm a big Hulk fan. He's my favourite superhero.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was this Monster book was a Hulk comic pitch he did in the mid-80s.
Yeah, that's right. I was reading about this today. The only reason I mentioned Barry Windsor-Smith is because he's on my lips, because I'm doing one with Eamon Clarke about a Wolverine issue, an Uncanny X-Men issue he did. So I've been sort of looking at some of his stuff today.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I did read something about that. I can't remember what it said. So that's finally coming out. Is that the plan? Is it all?
Fantagraphics are putting it out. I think it's either later this year or next year.
Oh, right.
But honestly, it's been decades that it was first talked about. And the first time I read about it was in the Comics International magazine.
Yeah, Des Skins.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And, well, do you know what? That's not even true. I wrote into Comics International with a letter about it.
Nice.
I'm getting mixed up here.
Yeah.
Before that, I read about it somewhere else. And the big stink about it was there's a famous issue of the Hulk where it goes into how he grew up and all that, and they used a lot of the ideas for that in the first Hulk movie.
Oh, okay, right, yeah, I get you.
And Barry Windsor-Smith, with contention, was that he'd taken in this pitch and they'd went no, and then they'd went and done issue of the comic anyway,
right,
using his ideas. So that was naughty, wasn't it?
Yeah, there you go.
But anyway, I'm looking forward to the finished book.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, it's about time we had
Monster.
Something new from him.
Yeah.
Okay, so going back to this, I've got a few final questions for you here. I think we kind of covered most of it, actually. I think we did a nice deep dive in what he meant there. But what's the first question I've got? Is it just an alternative view, or have you and did you take this totally on board? Did this become... In other words, did this become sort of your raison d'être for comic making? Was this your, did you like full on, would you have had this on a t-shirt sort of thing? Was it really on your mind for a period of time?
I don't think it was as straightforward as that. Obviously, I read that letter. I liked his comics. I was impressed by his point of view.
Yeah.
But then it wasn't like I ran out that day and started.
Yeah, you know? I get you.
But it did sink in, and I still think it's really valid. And so yes and no.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. Yes, okay, okay.
I guess it would depend what the t-shirt looked
yes,
like
very true.
If it was a cool one
very
or not.
True. and the other one is, do you think there's an element of self-indulgence in this book?
Well, that's funny. No, there was somebody else saying something about self-indulgence.
Right.
So I was thinking about self-indulgence very recently, and I don't know that I've got a problem with self-indulgence.
Okay, yeah. It's certainly self-obsessed, isn't it? Which can be okay.
Yes,
yeah.
It is. I think as long as it's good, it's okay. I don't mind self-indulgence, I think.
Okay.
I'm all for that.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the opposite of self-indulgence is professionalism or something. I don't know.
No.
Thinking about, I don't know either, but I think self-indulgent things have got more chance of being authentic and saying something original
than something that's professional. The old argument about doing it for yourself rather than doing it for, you know, Star Wars International, whatever you're doing the comic for, is relevant there, isn't it? I think he's clearly doing his comic himself, isn't he? I can't imagine he thinks of the reader when he's writing about his wife having a baby in this, for example. You know,
I think he would think about the reader in a way.
Right.
This is a can of worms you're opening.
Yeah.
Because when you think about doing your work, you want to make it real. See, there's a thing of like, do you know, you often get that thing, think of the audience, think of what they want and then make that or something.
Yeah.
Right? You hear things like that, don't you? And I think, well, fuck that. I'll leave other people to do that, you know? Somebody else can do that.
There's a famous Bowie quote that did the rounds last year, wasn't there, about if you're writing a song for the balcony, it's not going to be any good. You know, he never plays to the balcony. He just plays.
That's true. The balcony will love it right enough, and they'll pay for the tickets, so that'll be good. But, you know, it'll be not maybe worth much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, man? I think there's maybe space for everything, but certainly in the sort of area of comics that we make, we kind of write for ourselves, don't we? Really, or just to, I usually just write to make Adam Faub laugh. That generally is why
you kind of make something that, I mean, the thing is, you when somebody says, do you think they think of the audience? And if you say, it kind of seems like maybe it's got to be, it's like if you say no, then you don't care if it's good. You're just doing anything for yourself.
Yeah, I get you.
And I don't think that's true. You're still trying to make it. I mean, I'm interested in comics being highly readable to people.
Yes, yeah.
And you know, you can understand it, you can enjoy it, you laugh at it. You know, it's maybe got a good idea in it. Things like that.
But
now,
I agree.
That having been said, you can make a comic about anything you want to, you know.
Yeah, and you should do. But I think the thing is as well is art itself its own thing. It doesn't need, which shouldn't be either way. It's, you're making it for, it sounds very Ponzi, Dave, but you're making it for art's sake. Yeah, almost, yeah.
I absolutely agree with you. And I know it sounds Ponzi, but it's also true. And I have, it's funny, a few years ago, I got to speaking to people in the comic scene in the local area. And once you do that, you start getting different people's ideas on comics. And I did actually meet a person who, you know, we were discussing building stories had just come out.
Okay, yeah.
Chris Ware. And somehow I had got that, and I remember saying, well, what do you think? You know, I mean, I liked it. I thought there was loads in it. It was really impressive. Yeah. And the one sentence response was, he's trying too hard. And I I thought, wow, that's it. Somebody looked at that, went, trying too hard.
Yes, and that it's was a very adult about a kid at school or girl about a bloke trying to chat you up comment. It doesn't really apply itself to a graphic novel. Weird, isn't it? Yeah.
It's just... So, you know... And what was... There was another thing that character said.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, he actually outright said, you know, when art, when comics are getting done, not... I can't remember how he put it, but it was like, if a comic was being done and it wasn't for the for a market, for people, there was no practical use to it reaching a market or something, then didn't really understand what it was for,
okay.
You know?
Yeah. Kind of so like if it's not commercial, why
self-indulgent.
Yeah. Which is, what they're coming at, isn't it?
And so I can't really say, well, you're wrong there. But I can sit and say, my God, you know, you choose what you want to fill your life with and what you want to make yourself, you know. And I wasn't coming from this person's
My attitude would be to point out to him that there's more to it than just that. You know, it's very sort of slightly two-dimensional view of it, isn't it? In a way.
Well, in my opinion, yeah. But, you know, I just left it. I was too busy sitting being agog at what I was hearing. Trying too hard.
Yeah.
Wow, that's it. Okay.
As I see that in your future as the name of another one of your collections. Yeah.
When you started this with the question, is it self-indulgent? if I can just ask you, when you thought of that question, were you thinking that that was a negative thing about the book?
Maybe, yeah. Because I wrote that question down after I'd read just the first story. I read the first story in quite a bad mood after sort of quite a tiresome afternoon the other day. And I went back and reread it today over lunchtime during quite a frustrating day at work. And I found it completely different. I found the self-indulgence that I'd sort of confessed through my own frustration, I'd found it to be actually more of a sort of calming influence on me, to be fair. This today, it was a weird one. And I wrote that indulgence thing.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think it is. And I was thinking about that on the drive home today. I was thinking about talking to you about that. And I know we've mentioned it, is the impact that your attitude has on the art that you're either reading or creating. And I think that's kind of it for me. And yes, I was slightly annoyed by there being a full page picture of a clock. And me thinking, I could look at a clock any time. You know, I was sort of in those really sort of grumpy mood, you know.
See, that is such a great example, because I looked over that today and I was reading it. And then when I got to the clock, I thought, see, there you go, time.
Okay, right. Yeah,
and that impressed me.
Yeah.
Whereas it could annoy you.
Yeah. What's that whole thing about? Yeah, we're different people depending on the time of the day sometimes, aren't we? Yeah. Our attitudes change.
Good. Yeah. I like that question.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Good. Right, we're going to pause.
Have you got any other questions?
We're going to ask you about yourself in a second. So we're going to pause for our advert. Got a pause for a word.
All right. Oh God. Okay.
The last time I did this, there was such a long pause from you that I actually had to edit a bit of it out because it just people would have thought the recording had stopped. Tom messaged me saying that was hilarious. Dave's reaction to the advert. Okay, so let's see. So now pause for a word from our sponsors. Do you look good in black? Can you keep a straight face when someone is confessing all their dirty little secrets to you? Also, can you turn a blind eye to child abuse and then shamelessly collect money in the name of a made-up religious figure? Then why not become a priest? Brackets, wanking not allowed. Okay, back to you, Dave. Good. Thank you for that. It's the new sponsor.
All right.
Yep. Right, so what have we got from you? We've got Mount to Rescue. Very exciting. The new Fred Egg comics book. So did you want to tell us a little bit? Is that the one that you were doing with Mike? Is Mike in that one?
Mike, isn't it? Yes.
Mike Zarka. Yeah, so what's this one about, dude?
Mike's... This one is a collection of... It's one of my one-man anthologies.
Yep.
I say one man, but I've always got guest artists.
Yep.
So it's pretty much all written by me. About two-thirds of it drawn by me, and then there's my artist's alley section where I just get different people to draw one page. And yeah, I'm pleased with it. I just got the proof at the weekend.
Who'd you
And
go with, printing wise?
it was CPUK.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Cool.
And the cover is of it is kind of a take on, like those Avengers Endgame movie
Multiple
posters,
characters
all that
sort of
kind of
thing.
thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. You get like 26 characters on a poster.
Right, okay.
I thought I'm going to do one of them. Yeah. So I pretty much did. I've got a character from all the different stories inside, and they're all like huddled up together on the cover. Manta Rescue. It's got Moses on the front, Grace Jones, Magnum
Saw
PI,
this.
John McEnroe, Yoda, Apostate. Yeah, it's got a lot of different characters on the
Is
front
there
there.
a sort of general theme, or is it just a collection of fun stories, or what's the idea?
It's just a collection of different things. Every project I do, I'm always thinking, I'll put this in a book.
Right. Yeah.
So all the different things I do for different projects, other anthologies, I've always got an eye on these being
Okay.
collected. So I've got my Blade Runner tribute comic I did. I've got another one about a religious phone-in. A religious phone-in. Sorry
Sounds
there.
genius.
I've got. Yeah, I like to do the 24-hour, what are they called? Oh, hourly comic
Oh
day
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
I've got one of
Oh
them.
nice. Because
Yeah.
you put out so
Yeah,
your
so
books are
there's
always
a.
pretty thick, dude. There's no how many pages are you going? I'm just looking at WoW Retracted.
72
It's
pages
good
in
stuff,
this
man.
one.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
you're gonna launch it, or you're gonna stick it on your site, or what's the plan? You're gonna can't we can't do signings anymore, I suppose, for a while, can we?
No. I usually put up little previews, little snips of all the stories on my
Yep.
website or on my
Yep.
blog. And then I'll put it up in the shop to go on sale. I think that's about it for the plan for the launch. So that should be later this month.
Cool. And things
I
rock
actually
on with that comic smell. You're putting out regular. Are you doing like a little video chat now? Are you? I see from the other day.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we did one on Surreal
Yes, I've got
Comics
that downloaded, ready to listen to.
and Weird
Yeah,
Comics.
looking forward to that one because I know
Yeah,
that's your bag, isn't it?
so
The
we're doing another.
Fantagraphics area of comics is certainly something you're very fond of, and I know that you've got. I mean, Tom's bang into it as well, isn't he?
Yeah, yes, yeah.
Good stuff.
Tom's actually more he's more up to date than me, I would
Right.
say. He keeps up to date with things more than I do.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
I'm too busy,
So what you've been reading? What have you been
making
reading
stuff.
recently that you could recommend?
Okay. I have been. Let me think. There was a great comic called Atomic Hercules number two.
That filth. Yeah.
You set me up there, and I
Yeah,
did it.
nice one. Yeah, good. No, not even
No,
planned.
I
Yeah.
didn't. I did
Thank
enjoy
you, man.
that, and I have been. Last week I took a. I'm a big Star Trek
Oh, good man.
fan, so I had a I took an urge to watch every Star Trek movie,
Okay.
one a night last week.
Oh, cool.
I watched all six of them
Right.
because there's no more than that.
Yeah, it goes a bit rubbish.
After that, they fall off a
The day
cliff.
before the lockdown, I went with a pal and we saw Shatner present Wrath of Khan in a theatre that was barely had anyone in it because everyone was panicking about COVID. And we thought, oh, fuck it. He's whatever he is, 90. He's introducing the movie. Least we can do is
Yeah.
go along and watch it. And we did. And it was the best night ever. And literally that night we came out and were
Wow.
told, oh, by the way, you're not allowed to leave your house as of tomorrow. So yeah, I'm a big Star Trek movie. The movies are great, man. Not the new ones, I think they're shite, but the originals. Yeah.
That's incredible. I'm so jealous of you seeing Shatner in
He's
person.
great, man. This guy was interviewing him and he wasn't taking the geezer had clearly not done his research and Shatner was clearly a bit peeved. and he wasn't taking any shit off him. He was just sort of ignoring the questions and asking the audience stuff. It's quite cool.
Yeah. Oh, man. We went to New York years ago and we were staying in a hostel and stuff. And I thought, I'll go and buy, you know, Time Out magazine and see what's happening. So we were sitting and I was looking through it and it was like William Shatner signing his book.
Oh, nice.
In the park. That was the thing. It was like an open in the park. And I just, look at this. Look at this. I've got to go in that. And then I read a bit more and it was yesterday.
Yeah.
And I was brokenhearted, and still am. And it's even worse now that I've just heard your story. But the reason I mentioned that is it made me order some of the old Marvel Star Trek comics.
Oh, the nutty ones. The
Klaus Janson.
Yeah, before it went to DC and it all got a bit, you know, Peter David started writing it. It was at Marvel, wasn't it? Post the motion picture.
Yeah, that's right.
The motion picture came out. It was all that sort of time. Yeah.
That's right, yeah. That's
don't they go up against? So, isn't there one issue where they fight dwarves or something in it?
I've not got to that yet, but it sounds great.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it really does. Yeah. Good. Good stuff, man. Good. Let's...
I wasn't ready to tell you what
that's
I've
what
been
I dropped
reading.
That one on you.
You know when you get asked that, you go, what?
Yeah, we read comics all day long, don't we? And then we can never remember what we just read. I know the feeling. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Right, should we do the little outro? So, hopefully you got something out of that. Hopefully you'll go away and read something by Mr. Kolchalka or maybe listen to his music on Spotify, you millennial bastards. You can normally find me over at neverironanything.blogspot.com, buy my comics neverironanything.bigcartel.com, follow me on Twitter, Ezoyez. Dave, where can people find you, mate?
You can find me on fredeggcomics.com or fredeggcomics.blogspot. And listen to that comic smell. We're doing that regularly again now that we've figured out the technology.
Yeah, I saw Tom was saying he was having some trouble with
and,
that.
Yeah, well, he sorted it all out. You know, I just plug in and talk.
You're the talent.
And apart from that, there's you know, Twitter and Facebook and all the usual gubbins.
Good stuff, man.
See you there.
And I'll speak to you soon, man.
Yeah, that was good. Cheers, thanks, Tony.